This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon once again. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj with Juliet Jacobs and Lim Su Ann, and this is the Daily Digest. So in our first story earlier on this afternoon, we were talking to you about the fact that scientists are deciding to invent a fake rhino horn to kind of counter the poaching of real rhino horns. And that ended on a little bit of a depressing note. So we're moving swiftly on to our next story of the day, which is about the beautiful beasts that are Komodo dragons. Now, the Komodo National Park in Indonesia is home to the world's largest cicak, which is, of course, a Komodo dragon. An animal that doesn't really look out of place in the next installment of Jurassic Park, growing up to 3 meters long and weighing in at upwards of 70 kilograms. The dragon size is attributed to a phenomenon called island gigantism. So this is a biological phenomenon in which the size of animals isolated on an island increases dramatically in comparison to its mainland relatives.
Yes, and Komodo dragons are not just isolated on their home islands, they are actually protected. Mm. Since 1980, the 29 volcanic islands on which they are found was gazetted as the Komodo National Park, and in 1991 it was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
And it's actually not too difficult to get to the National Park if you fancy getting up close with some of the Komodo dragons on their home turf. The town of Labuan Bajo is the mainland jumping off point, and that's about an hour's flight from Bali. And then from Labuan Bajo, you can either take a speedboat for about 1 hour or so, or you can take a regular 3-hour boat ride, and that gets you straight into the heart of the national park.
And up until earlier this month, the fee to enter the Komodo National Park was at a very reasonable rate of 10 US dollars. And then the news hit that it might increase, and not just by a little bit, it's by 100 times. So the new proposed fee for setting foot on Komodo Island is 1,000 US dollars.
Ridiculous. Here's what sparked the move. So in May 2018, so May of last year, Komodo National Park received its first large group of Chinese tourists. Okay. Then at least 15 cruise ships were also granted permission to make Komodo Island a regular port of call. Let me just say that again, cruise ships. Mm. Then in early 2019, the region's governor, Victor Bungtili Laiskodat, announced a potential 1-year closure of the park because of a decrease in lizard and prey numbers in the Komodo National Park itself. And he said at that point that the closure was going to allow the lizards and their favourite prey of deer to repopulate.
And this is quite good news, right? But before anyone could react to that news, a smuggling ring was exposed in March of this year for selling more than 41 Komodo dragons.
Unbelievable.
And where they were doing this? On Facebook.
Yeah, that's actually the new space for illegal wildlife trade. Right. Everything is happening there, unfortunately. So in July this year, actually, the authorities have confirmed that the main Komodo island will close in January 2020, and specifically mentioned that it was to curb large numbers of tourists meddling with the well-being of these poor dragons.
That's exactly what he said. Which brings us back to a couple of weeks ago when it was announced that the island would not be closed.
Oh my God, make up your minds.
Right. And the plot thickens, okay, because the proposed national park entrance fee hike that you mentioned earlier, Suan, is at an exorbitant amount. But we're going to get to that in a little bit. At first, I wanted to hear what Julian Hyde of Reef Check Malaysia thought about closing islands off to tourists and what kind of an impact that would have to the surrounding marine life.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Funnily enough, there isn't much published data on this. I mean, if you do a quick search on the internet, you'll find that numerous destinations are starting to put a cap on numbers, but many of cities like Barcelona, Dubrovnik, and places like Machu Picchu, so other terrestrial sites. But there's not much information on islands. But it's not rocket science. There's lots of anecdotal information about closing islands, even from our own doorstep. If you close islands, then you reduce impacts from tourism. And tourists, you know, do damage. They create trash, there's sewage pollution. There's physical damage from divers and snorkelers and general disturbances from human activities like boating. So closing the islands will remove those impacts, right? Mm. Less tourists, then less damage. The only evidence I can give you is anecdotal evidence from the islands off the east coast, Perhentian, Redang and Tiaman, where they close down for the monsoon season.
Right.
And there's plenty of reports that when people come back, it's like, well, there's loads of fish. So, you know, it appears as though removing the people for a while not only reduces the physical impacts that damage coral reefs, but perhaps the disturbances removed so the fish populations come back. So I think it's generally good for the ecosystems to close islands like this. But you've always got to remember that a lot of tourist islands also have local populations that rely on tourism for jobs.
Mm.
So we've got to take their needs into account as well.
Okay. And when islands are closed off, let's say during the monsoon season, weather permitting, is there any remedial work that can be done?
Not really, to be honest. You can tidy up the beaches. You can maybe maintain sewage systems, sewage their septic tanks.
Right.
But in terms of remedial work on the ecosystems, no, you can't go around with a pot of glue and glue back together coral reefs. Just leaving it alone for a while can be sufficient to allow the ecosystem to start to recover.
Okay. So when last year the Indonesian government announced that it was planning to make Komodo Island a port of call for cruise ships, what, in your opinion, could be the potential consequences of doing so?
Okay. I don't know where to start. and it's not just cruise ships. It's anywhere. Just imagine unchecked numbers of tourists, right?
Mm.
So start with the physical damage. Physical damage is done by marine tourists, by tourists on land. It's not necessarily deliberate, but a snorkeler can stand on a piece of coral. A diver can kick a piece of coral with a fin. Somebody walking along a track on an island can move off the track and accidentally damage some bit of an ecosystem.
Mm.
More tourists, then more physical damage, right?
Mm.
Then you've got all of the waste that these people generate. You know, enough people with enough packaged products, with enough bags of bread, with enough, ice creams, any product you want that's wrapped in rapid packaging,
mm-hmm.
we don't manage that very well as a society. So all of that trash is going to increase. You've got sewage from all of these people visiting. Sewage introduces nutrients into the marine ecosystem, and the nutrients can cause algae to grow, and that smothers coral reefs. So you kill the coral reefs. Then what have you got to look at? And more importantly, what have the marine organisms got to feed on? Because they all feed from different parts of the coral reefs. More transportation is more pollution and disturbance. And, you know, cruise ships are known to have the most polluting fuel in the transport industry. Bunker fuel is very, very polluting.
Mm.
You've got more hotels and jetties and airports, more infrastructure. So if you increase the number of tourists and if it's cruise ships, then you're simply increasing the impact on those ecosystems. And these are remote ecosystems. They are fragile. They are known to be easily damaged. So I think we need to be very careful about increasing numbers in this particular way. I know people who've been on cruises in the Mediterranean and the Aegean Sea, and towns like Dubrovnik are completely swamped with tourists from cruise ships that come ashore, several cruise ships arriving a day sometimes, and the towns are just crowded. So not even the tourists are getting a good deal anymore, right? And what's the impact on the local communities?
Mm.
Look at our own Pulau Tiaman, 4,000 population, 250,000 visitors a year. What is the impact of that sort of thing on their own society, their own little island culture?
And I dare say the Komodos won't be very happy either.
I just read a report recently that tourists feeding the Komodo dragons, I mean, these fellows are 3 meters long, right? Why would you approach one to feed it? However, tourists feeding them have changed their behavior so they're less wary of humans. And that introduces a whole area of human-animal conflicts that can only end badly for the Komodo dragons.
That was Julian Hyde of Reef Check Malaysia, who is, of course, infinitely familiar with tourists trampling over islands.
Hmm.
So back to Indonesia now, where the government has announced that instead of closing Komodo Island, it will instead set bounds for the number of tourists. Their coordinating maritime affairs minister, Luhut Binsar Panjaitan, said that they would rearrange the ticketing system to enter the island.
Yeah, so apparently what this actually means is applying for a membership. Mm. So those holding premium membership can visit Komodo Island. However, those with a non-premium membership card, they'll be directed to one or more of the other 28 islands that make up the national park. And you can still see dragons on these other islands too.
Mm. So the figures being thrown around are $1,000 for the premium membership, and that's valid for a year. Yep. And while the fee for non-premium membership, that's valid for a single entry, that hasn't been made clear yet.
Actually, nothing is clear about this whole debacle, except for the tourist numbers. Now, according to the Indonesian Ministry of Tourism, back in 2014, Komodo National Park had 80,000 visitors. By 2017, so 3 years later, it was nearly 120,000 visitors. Last year, it was 180,000 visitors. In the next 6 weeks, they're going to close out the year with, they're estimating, 500,000 visitors.
Wow. That's a lot of visitors. Mm-hmm. And when they were announcing the reversal of the ban as well, the government said that it will build a Komodo Research Centre on Komodo Island. They will conduct the management of its logistics and waste production. I'm not too sure what that means. Mm-hmm. And they will also reorganise the route for yachts to Komodo Island and Labuan Bajo.
And cruise companies operating in the region are not at all worried by this most recent development. In a recent Condé Nast article, cruise operators said that they have not been notified of any fee hike and that their routes remain the same for next year.
So, you know, all things being equal, I was one of the 80,000 tourists who visited Komodo back in 2014. And I've got to tell you, it was absolutely pristine. Mm-hmm. The airport had just opened. The international airport had just opened. The international airport just recently, in the last 2 years, has undergone another upgrade to make it even bigger. But in 2014, it had just opened. In fact, the day we got there, even the day we left, the baggage carousel wasn't working. People were just
that new.
They know it opened the week we arrived. And right. Komodo Island and Rinka Island, the Komodo National Park itself, was just the most stunning place I had ever seen on Earth. The dragons were all in the natural habitat. The guides, who are all park rangers, were incredibly well informed. They were very respectful of the dragons. They, you know, didn't try and poke them or, you know, encourage, you know,
the three-meter long dinosaurs.
No, but you do have, you know, you often do have wildlife guides who sometimes will kind of try and get a rise out of animals that, and this is driven by, you know, photograph crazy tourists, right? But, you know, back in 2014, things were still, you know, fairly on an even keel. I also found out a little bit too late after I'd gone swimming that Komodo dragons can swim. I'm telling you that I got out of that water pretty quickly. Yes, we paid $10 each to enter the national park, which is a marine park. I am all for the fee being raised. I think 1,000 is prohibitive. Mm-hmm. I think part of the beauty of these places is to be able to go and to appreciate them. But what do you think? Do you think that a hike is in order?
I think it's important to have a hike because you want to ensure that there is enough income going in so that they can maintain the islands as well, that you can make sure that the habitat remains as is, that even if you have a bit of an increase in tourists, you have enough funds to make sure that that doesn't impact the habitat of the dragons.
I don't know if it will work because to get to Komodo Island is not easy, right? You already have to pay quite a bit to get there, I'm assuming.
Well, it's an hour away from Bali.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever the cost of your flight to Bali is, plus then the cost from Bali to Labuan Bajo, which wasn't a lot, actually. It probably was maybe half of what it cost us to get to Bali.
Okay.
It was an internal flight, and we flew the national carrier as well, in the Indonesian national carrier. And the boat wasn't, we didn't go on one of these fancy boats. It wasn't all that expensive. It wasn't an expensive holiday. Then again, this was 5 years ago.
Right. So, I mean, what I'm thinking is that the people who can afford to go, they're not necessarily the ones who are going to behave themselves either. I mean, I think we've seen that, you know, people with suddenly a lot of money and, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, like tourists from China, for example, I mean, even their own government were teaching them how to behave when they went overseas because they were suddenly in possession of a lot of money and they were starting to travel the world and not behaving well. So I don't think the money issue would you know, stop them from misbehaving as such, because and the more expensive you make it, the more exotic it is a place to go. So all the more you want to go and get your photo taken there.
Exactly the issue we were talking about in our first story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
So more it becomes exoticized. Yeah.
So that this idea of increasing fees is not new, right? Many national parks do it. You know, our own national parks also impose fees, although they are crazily low. And it's something like 5 ringgit
for
a Malaysian to enter one of our marine national parks in Sabah, I believe. But let's take the example of the Galapagos Islands, for example. Next year, as of next year, the 1st of January onwards, they will see a price hike. Mm-hmm. If previously you paid $100 to go to the islands, then you will now need to pay $200. But if no part of your journey is going to be spent in mainland Ecuador, if you are going just to the islands themselves, then your entry fee becomes $400. Mm-hmm. That's pretty steep, and that's a 4 times increase.
And I guess that way they're also trying to encourage you to visit Ecuador itself also, right? To encourage local tourism there. And that you're not just going to Galapagos Islands.
Mm-hmm. I guess to help improve their economy. But again, I go back to the argument, you know, it's the people who can afford it are already going to these places. So I don't know if that's going to change behavior.
Yeah. And that whole thing about the local economy is also interesting. I don't know what the lay of the land is now, but back in 2014, of the 29 islands that make up the Komodo National Park, not all of them were inhabited. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the two main islands, I think the main island, Komodo Island itself, does have a village of locals on the other side of the island that's not accessible. And of course, it's the rangers themselves who live in camps on these islands. I hear that these days there are a lot more touristy kind of souvenir stands and F&B stands. That certainly wasn't in existence 5 years ago. I can imagine it's mushroomed. So the idea of how much it would actually galvanize, quote unquote, a local economy remains to be seen. I think.
And then there's the worry of waste as well, right? If you have all these stalls popping up, then people will be eating food there.
The plastic waste.
Which is exactly what Julian, whom we spoke to earlier, Julian Hyde from Reef Check, that was his concern as well, right? I mean, he's seen what is very clearly the rubbish, the sea of rubbish that is left behind by tourists. But there's also another more interesting part to the story, one last thing that we'll discuss before we wrap it up. You know, I remember earlier on how you mentioned, Suan, that back in March, there was 41 Komodos were actually smuggled out of the national park and sold on Facebook. How do you smuggle Komodos? 3 meters long each out of the national park?
I'm very certain there's a high degree of organized criminality involved. Mm-hmm. I'm very sure there's corruption involved as well.
Right.
It's the only way you can get these monsters out.
Which means that the raising of the fees has nothing to do with the price of fish.
Yeah. Exactly.
You have to get to the root of the problem. And if the Indonesian government is willing to, you know, I'm glad that the news that the Komodos were being, you know, smuggled out made it to the news. Mm-hmm. That's a good step rather than, you know, hushing it up and kind of, you know, keeping it under wraps. But I think they're going to need to definitely address that first. I think we just need to put all the rhinos and Komodos of the world into islands far away from people and let's just let them do their thing.
Yeah. We should just get rid of people, you know?
So we're almost ready to wrap up on our stories for today. We'll do one final check-in on our social media question.
Yeah, so we did ask you, you know, in light of this story, should Malaysia's ecotourism sites close periodically to allow for regeneration? And a resounding 100% of you have said yes. And the Sustainable Network actually tweeted in to say that any nature-based tourism site management should be based on carrying capacity. And you're very, very right about that.
And thank you for that. We really, really appreciate you writing in. So that's all the time that we have for today's stories. But, you know, please keep the conversation going. If you've got any more thoughts on either one of our animal stories today, please do share your thoughts with us by tweeting us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 01878988899. You can also look us up at BFM The Bigger Picture on Facebook. Let us know if there are any interesting stories that come your way that you'd like for us to carry on the Daily Digest. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcasts, bfm.my/thedailydigest, or via the BFM app, or via Spotify. Now, coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, Sharmila Ganesan speaks to a trio of dancers from Canada who tell the stories of three Indigenous nations from North America through their performances. Please do stay tuned for that. We're signing off for now and leaving you with Tokyo by the Imagine Dragons.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.